Welcome to Circular Firing Squad. I'm Marty Gentius, a counseling faculty at Kent State University and a host for Circular Firing Squad. We've got five members and five questions and five answers for each question. Questions are generated by each squad member and run from the fervent to the feckless. Let's see who's with us in this episode.
Hey everyone, Jen Cook, Associate Professor, University of Texas at San Antonio.
Hey everybody, Gina Martin, Assistant Professor at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater.
Hey all, Mitch Conrad, Graduate Student at Cleveland State University.
Hi everyone, Elliot Ingersoll, Professor of Counseling at Cleveland State University and host of Apply Topically.
And Jen, you're up with the first question.
All right, folks, how's your wellness currently?
I love this question. I love that I'm the first one to answer this because I'm going to just take us right down the drain. So I am coming to the end of a hellish semester. I've had teaching on overload. I've had a lot of grants. I've had a lot of research stuff come up. And so I can't remember the last time I did something for myself. I can't remember the last time I wasn't grading. Everything is done now. And I'm just living in this moment of like paranoia of like, have I forgotten something? Is there another massive assignment? When is the next shoe going to drop? I don't know. It could be tonight. It could be tomorrow. Or I could be totally fine. So TBD. And I don't think I'm well.
How many books have you read, Gina?
A lot. Yep. This is a better question, Jen. You know me. So I have read Lessons in Chemistry. I have read two fantasy romantasy books. I have read A Murder Mystery, The Guest List. So yes, I've just to name a few. But yes, the reading is in full force.
So you're more well than you thought, I guess, is my point with that.
It's true. Well, to an extent, and living with the full anxiety of, am I missing something?
Yeah. So wellness, I guess, you know, it's just weird how the semester's ended for me, because a lot of my big stuff was due like the previous week. Like I have a psychopharmacology final this week, but not overly worried about that. Just because it's the only thing that I've been able, like, I've just been able to dedicate an entire week to focusing on like just that one thing. I feel like, you know, it's kind of interesting looking back as a student and like what I thought at the beginning of the semester for like goals for myself. I feel like I've achieved most, if not all of them. Certainly a couple things are like still in the works and a couple things like don't ever stop, it seems. But Gina, I definitely feel that paranoia, even though the semester is over, it's like, when is the next thing to pop up and be a large scale project that's going to consume at least a week or two or 3 weeks of my time? It just feels like it's right around the corner. I'm just going to hope that it's not actually there. But I would say that overall, I feel like I'm doing pretty good. I think I've heard it's said to me that I tend to like think about the future a lot and not stay as much in the present. And so I like a lot of my time right now is spent like, what am I going to do? You know, what am I doing next semester? There's a lot of big decisions that I have to make about a doctorate program, about where I'm going to intern, about like specific presentations that I'd like to do and research that I'd like to do. So it feels like next semester is, even though it's a month away, it's right around the corner. But I'd say that I'm doing pretty well, I would say.
My only notes were on to you, Marty. I don't have a lot. this year has been a rough year. I've got this kind of serial grieving thing going on, and I just got to get these procedures done for bone-on-bone arthritis, and I just don't want to do it. When I thought about it, I was like, actually, in light of that, I'm doing okay, because I've kind of cut to just strength training for like rehabbing new knees and whatever. And I'm just trying to be mindful of my energy. But yeah, I bitched about 2021. Shit, I hadn't seen anything.
Well, you know, Elliot, I don't have much more than what you have to say. I thought about this in wellness. That's a large area. And so there are good parts and there are bad parts. Sleep has been bad lately. I don't know if it's my neuropathy from the diabetes. My blood sugar has been all over the place. I was taking Ozempic for a long period of time until all the supermodels started stealing it from me so they could lose those 10 pounds. And, you know, diabetics and people who are trying to fight the disease are fighting supermodels right now. Finally, could not get it in stock. So the doctor switched me to Mounjaro, and I've just been on it a couple of weeks. We'll have to see how it works with my blood sugar. Really, the thing that tries to keep me the healthiest is morning meditation. And because of the bad sleep, I've been kind of sleeping up to the point where I give myself an excuse not to join the group and just drink an extra cup of coffee. And hopefully that'll change as things slow down, and I've got a little break from the holidays. That'll be nice too. My mental attitude, I wrote down, is probably better than miserable. Things are just stressful right now, and that's showing up in my wellness.
I almost feel a little guilty because I'm doing okay over here. I feel pretty balanced. My sleep is trash. That interestingly, like in the last, like I would say 13, 14 years, like when I start to get stressed, my sleep just goes in the trash, which is really funny because that was always my happy defense mechanism place, was to sleep. And something just like a switch like flipped several years ago. And all of a sudden, like I'm having all these sleep problems and can't stay asleep, can't fall asleep, you know, so on and so forth. And so I go through these cycles, and I've been one that hasn't been very good for about a month. And so it's fascinating to me that that's often an indicator of, you know, a lot of stress, not keeping a good routine. Like I need sleep hygiene. You know, people talk about sleep hygiene. I need to go to bed. Typically, if I'm in bed after 12:30, I'm screwed. Like it's not going to go well. And ideally I need to be in the bed by 10. But that just, my brain never adjusts to going to bed at 10 o'clock. It's like, oh my gosh, who goes to bed this early? You're not a farmer. You know, like I have like some kind of visceral reaction to going to bed at a typical time, you know, and I get up at 5:30, you know, I mean, so it makes sense to go to bed at 10 o'clock if you get up at 5:30, but you know, mentally feel really strong, emotionally feel strong. I mean, this was an intense first semester at my new institution, and it's a healthy place. And so I think that health kind of has rubbed off on me. I didn't quite trust it at first, to be completely honest. It felt, this is not real. This has to be honeymoon, you know? And what I've realized is that it is on the spectrum of healthy. And so that has had a positive effect on me, kind of across the board. So for me, when my employment wellness or occupational wellness is high, it's a lot easier for me to have wellness in other categories because we spend so much time at work in our professions. So yeah, on the whole, pretty well. I need to get that sleep settled, but the break is imminent. So I'm really hopeful that I'm going to get the reset during the break.
I was going to mention work, but I do not want to reflect negatively on Cleveland State and their fine management team.
So Jen, it's funny you say that. I also have been noticing with the amount of stress that I've been in, like my sleep hasn't necessarily been horrendous or anything like that, but I have had unbelievable amounts of dreams about my colleagues, my students, the work that I'm doing. And I'm like, you all need to get out of my head. Like I love you all, and I need to I have some separation.
And for real, out of your bed, like,
yeah, no,
that is not the place for my students and my colleagues. I don't even read email in bed for that reason. I'm like, no, we're not gonna be in bed together. That's just wrong and creepy.
Mm-hmm. It is. And we have definitely crossed that line. So next question. What is right on task? What is your department's theme song currently or overall?
Yeah. So in terms of maybe overall, I'm going to defer to Dr. Ingersoll for that one. I'm thinking about what's coming up this week with some, with the interviews for new candidates. And I know that, I sent an email out to all the students and they can come and they can, interview the candidate. But in terms of what I'm going to be playing loud when the candidate first comes to the department this week, I'm going to be playing No Scrubs by TLC. One of my favorite songs, I think the lyrics are pretty appropriate. Like, no, I don't want your number. No, I don't want to give you mine. And no, I don't want to meet you nowhere. And no, don't want none of your time. So if you're coming to Cleveland State this week, we want no scrubs.
Oh, that's excellent, actually. I like that. Yeah, for me right now, the overall department, it would be the theme to Mission Impossible, But I would say there are impossible things that grow from the ground, and there are those that fall from the sky. And almost all of these are falling from the sky. If I was going to give it in kind of a primitive mythology in terms of deities, that's how I would say it.
You know, Elliot, I'm surprised you didn't choose Working Man by Rush. As much as we've been indoctrinated with Geddy Lee, I was surprised Working Man wasn't your choice.
Well, because all I can think is this ain't working, man. It just,
I as much as I say work is stressful, I like my work environment. And so when I got this question earlier in the day, I'm like, what is the song going to be? And what kept going through my head, because I'm a talking heads sort of guy, was this must be the place. It's a comfortable, nice little ditty song. If you saw Stop Making Sense, the movie that was reissued recently, there's a nice a lamp dancing scene to that song. But, everything's just, some days I walk into work and the song is Just One Victory by Todd Rundgren, which is an old song. It's the song he generally ends every concert with. That was the thing. That was the kind of, let's all stand up and sing this together. Somehow, someday, we need just one victory and we're on our way. We're praying for it all day and fighting for it all night. Give us just one victory and it'll be all right. And some days work feels like that. So,
Elliot, I'm almost surprised that you didn't choose to take this job and shove it. I mean, honestly, when I heard your description, I'm like, I know that's where we're going. I had a hard time with this.
I like most of my job. The teaching, the students, I absolutely love that work. It's the other stuff.
Yeah. The management, the bureaucracy. This was a little bit challenging for me because I'm just getting to know this group of people and getting the flavor. But there were two songs that popped in my mind and it was funny. Well, actually there were three and I had to spend a whole lot of time getting the White Stripes out of my head. For whatever reason, the White Stripes were like going through my head. Seven Nation Army was stuck in my head and I had to get that out of there to be able to find something. So anyway, I landed on two, and I'll just share them both, which is Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, because I work with some really go-getters in my program. And it's interesting because they're all trying to rule the world, but ruling it as a group. Like they're not trying to singularly, unilaterally rule the world, but that came to mind. And then funny enough, Modest Mouse, Float On. I don't know if you all know this song, but like, there's also like this chillness that happens like within our group. And I think I keep saying that it's because we're the most photograph faculty and counselor education. We selfie constantly. Like, we're having a faculty meeting, we're going to have a selfie. We're going to graduation, we're having a selfie. We are, you know, walking across the parking lot all together, there's going to be a selfie. Like, I work with the most energetic group of millennials on the planet who just, the phone comes out for the picture all the time. And I have to say, there is something to for morale with that. I mean, I hate having my picture taken, and all of a sudden you see that phone pop up with John Harrison's hand, you're jumping behind it, you know? And so there is sort of just this, we're going to float on, we're going to have some weird crap happen, but we're going to keep floating on and likely taking a selfie.
These are great. We should make a playlist. For me, so again, this is basically just a in the moment this week at Whitewater Counselor Ed. We have been under a lot of stress lately, as I've mentioned, as I've alluded to. We are down a couple faculty members, so we're all working overloads and everyone is feeling the stress right now at this point in the semester. And one of the songs that comes to mind with this is a song that actually came up in a meeting, and I was actually not present at said meeting, but someone started to sing The Carol of the Bells by, someone help me out, who's this by? You know what I'm talking about, like the, nobody knows what I'm talking about, and I'm not, I shouldn't sing it,
like,
but I'm going to, but it's like the instrumental one.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it could be like Mannheim Steamroller.
That's the one. That's the one. And now I'm beeping. I don't understand. Okay. Has the beeping gone? Okay, good.
That did you all hear when you say Mannheim Steamroller?
Okay, Mannheim Steamroller. So that is the song that came up in a meeting. Someone was singing the words to that song, like making up this I'm so stressed version of that and adding words to that. And then we got back, they got back to their offices from that. And I was sitting in my office with my door closed grading, because that is the state that I am in these days. If I'm not here, I am there grading with my door closed. And someone played that song and I came out of my office and I was like, oh my gosh, it's perfect. And we were all dancing down the hallway, making these movements. And then a student saw us, and then we explained the story to the student. And then whenever I ran into the student throughout the day, it was a dun, da, da, da. Every time I saw this group of students, I was like, oh my goodness. So that is our theme song this week. And going forward until the foreseeable future, we are just dancing down the hallway, going crazy. It's great.
Really like that question. Thanks, Gina. My question is, what have you done, felt, or seen that you wish you could experience again for the first time?
That would be just staying up all night with my kids when they were babies. I could live that over and over outside of time.
You know, this was a hard question for me to answer. I mean, you think of the typical things, birth of your first child, if that's part of your history, marriage, you know, you think of those important things. But the thing that struck me the most, it was one of those moments where I was really overcome with emotion. And there is a whole syndrome that's kind of based on this, that you're kind of drawn into the art and drawn into the world. Was when I went to the Basilica Cistern in Istanbul. And if you're there, you're walking around outside and you're at Sophia, you're walking around past the Blue Mosque, you're in this central center of history in the town. And you walk into this little building and the steps take you down and you enter this huge cistern with these old Roman columns in it and water and walkways so you can walk through it. It's very meditative. And it was such an emotional impact for me the first time that I went there. Now, whenever I do get to go back to Istanbul, I always go back to that place again, and preferably as soon as I get there. So if I arrive in the morning, I'm headed down there to just walk into that underground cistern. It's the Basilica Cistern. I'll put a link in the show notes for those of you who are listening to the podcast. You can page up, see the questions we asked, and I'll put a link in so you get an idea what it looks like if you're not familiar with it. But it's a grounding thing for me now when I go there. It's like, and when I get to go there with people who've never been there before, it's sort of like, oh, come on, you got to see this place first. And you really know you're in a different place and in a different time.
I kind of have like I don't know if this is sort of a backwards or bizarre way of talking about this, but I've only been to this place once, and so I don't know if I would feel it again, but several years ago, I went to Italy. I took my mom to Italy for her 70th birthday. She wanted to go to Italy, and so that's where we went. And when I was about, I'm going to say I was maybe 3 or 4 years old, my mom had bought a book about how to do photography, like different types of photography at a garage sale. It was a Kodak like picture book. And I remember reading this book as a little girl and saw the picture with forced perspective with the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you know, with the person standing there, you know, pushing up the Leaning Tower of Pisa. And so I, as a little girl, thought, I am going to go there and push it back up because this is just ridiculous that these people are standing there like they could push it up and they're not pushing it all the way up, you know, of course, the 4-year-old mind. So when I went to Pisa, and this was really one of the only things I wanted to see in all of Italy, by the way, the most peculiar thing, but this is what my adult as 4-year-old wanted to see. And I walked around the corner, and because you couldn't see it from the street or anything, you know, it's not like a lot of landmarks that you can see while you're driving by, and you come through the little street and you come around and it opens up. And I remember looking at it, and I felt like the 4-year-old all of a sudden with the book, looking in this picture book about taking forced perspective pictures. And I legitimately felt like I was 4. I was like, Mama, come on, we got to take the pictures. And I mean, we spent probably 45 minutes. And in fact, I'm not drinking out of it this evening. I have my Gilmore Girls coffee mug, but my mom made a coffee mug in sort of a sepia tone that is the picture of me at the Leaning Tower pushing up the tower. And it was just so viscerally bizarre to just transform into that state of feeling like a little kid sitting in our living room on the floor reading this book and seeing these people and doing it as an adult and knowing I can't push the tower up, but wanting those pictures and being there with my mom. And it's hard to describe, and I don't know if I would feel that way if I went back. But I certainly was transported to being 4 years old, seeing the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Oh, these are so great. I also really love this question. There are a number of things that come to mind, and now I feel bad that the birth of my first and only child is not one of them. But that being said... I think that for me, I think of a lot of book characters and meeting them for the first time. I love reading. You all know this. And that has always been kind of an escape for me. And so some of the series that I've really fallen in love with and gotten to know the characters really well over the course of 5, 6 books, lengthy books, just meeting them for the first time and getting to know them for the first time, there's always a longing that I can go back and redo that. And when you reread the book, it's not always the same because you don't experience it the same way the first time or as you did the first time. And then with that, kind of similar to what other people have shared, and I know I've talked a little bit about this on here, that a while ago I got to spend some time in East Africa, and I would go back and do that all over again. And just the feeling of smelling the red dirt and, you know, living that life, it would be incredible to experience that again for the first time. Now, similar to Jen, I've never been back, so I don't know if I would experience it all over again if I did go back. And it's been a life goal to go back and to bring the Don and the child back with me. So I guess we'll see.
Well, thanks for sharing, everybody. I think the origin of this question kind of came up for me. I was thinking about a question of if I could go back and have the same experience on psychedelics the first time, that was something that was extremely meaningful to me, was any time that I've used a psychedelic for the first time. But I would never want to change anything about those experiences. And so I was trying to think of what other things that I would want to go back and experience. And the thing that, that really broke through for me was listening to some of my favorite songs for the first time again. I think of this feeling that I get, and I know that some other people get. I might botch the pronunciation, but it's called Freesun. And it's basically that shiver that you kind of get very rarely. And I remember getting that with a lot of songs that I've listened to for years, 20, 25 years. And sometimes I'll still even have it when I listen to that music. So I'll never get to hear those songs for the first time again, but I would love to be in a situation where I knew I was going to listen to one of my favorite songs of all time for the first time. I think I just I would love to go and do something like that.
You know, I got to tag on, Mitch, because that was the other thing that was right behind my kids as babies. But I didn't elaborate, but I don't know, something about that baby smell. That's like hormonal heroin to me. I was just, my own kids and, just especially staying up all night with them. But anyway, the other thing, and Pete Townsend, he said this in, I think, about 1971. He said, one can never get enough of one's first musical copulation. He used the slang. But he said that when a song gets in you, when a song grabs you, and he said, it's, I suspect, very much like any love. We kind of keep being open to have it again, but it's never quite like that. So that, anyway, I really resonated with your answer too. That was lovely.
You're finally self-censoring at this point in the semester, Elliot. You've disappointed me.
Oh, I just got choked up and I didn't think crying on the podcast would be good for listening numbers.
I was more speaking to your substitution of copulation.
Oh, well, I didn't want to corey it up. I thought we were doing really good, without profanity tonight. And so, anyway, yeah, my question is a wee bit, it's kind of touching into counselor ed history. What might the ghost of Frank Parsons say about the state of today's counselor education?
Well, I get to answer first on this question, and I think we should probably explain to some of our listeners who the hell Frank Parsons is. And I say that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but also with some honesty there, because I don't know if we recognize him as much. He was considered a vocational counselor, but I think he really kind of generated a whole aspect of what counseling was about, but particularly around vocations. He said, you need to examine the personality traits of a person whose career you're working with. Then you need to inventory the traits of the job and then make the match between the person's traits and the job's traits together. To go to the heart of your question, Elliot, I think Frank Parsons would say, why have we made this so complicated? We've turned it into a huge system when it really is very simple about making contact with people, demonstrating your own sense of balance and transparency and genuineness, and having them creating a place where they can do the same.
I'm going to keep this real simple. I think if Frank Parsons came back from the dead today, he'd be like, why y'all hate vocation? Everybody's saying, I don't want to teach career. Career doesn't matter. Nobody does career counseling anymore. I mean, I can't even imagine the father of guidance what he would have to say about the attitudes of most counselor educators surrounding, including myself at times, our disdain for teaching career counseling, for engaging in career counseling, when career is, you know, besides social work and career have such a large foundation in our history and is still incredibly relevant today. So I think he would just be appalled of why y'all dissing on the vocation.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. And I think that, I don't know, there's so much truth in what he was talking about that, like, I look at us and I look at, you know, our group here, and every single one of us has like strong personality traits in different areas, and they all connect to counseling and the counselor ed field. And we've all mentioned, yes, there's stress, and yes, sometimes things get wild, and we all really love what we do, and that will increase our productivity, that will make us better at whatever it is that we're doing. So I think you're right. Slow things down, stick to the basics, and don't be afraid of career, because it is a large part of who we are. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so full disclosure, I had to look a little bit up about Frank Parsons. It's been a while. The thing that I immediately thought of was the relation to modern technology, and what technology looks like and how to integrate it into one's career, I think is a very interesting topic of conversation for me and especially my peers right now. I'm having a lot of conversations with people about how much they want to do like counseling on Zoom. And for me, that's like the last thing that I ever want to do in any like career that I would have is like, how do I spend more time, or how do I spend less time online when I'm like doing work is really like what I'm interested in doing. And it seems like there's a lot of variable opinions on that. It seems like more people are actually going the other way. Just in my like, you know, I don't have like long-term data or statistics about this. This is just mainly like what I'm hearing in my peer groups and my colleagues at other students at Cleveland State. It just seems that people are really interested in telehealth. So I'm interested to see like how past perspectives would apply to modern technology and modern revolutions in how we are doing our work.
Wow. These answers are all far better than mine. This was kind of a whimsical, I don't know, I was daydreaming and I was thinking about that. And yeah, so I think he might have been like, Mother Trucker, I should have shaved off the beard and sold franchises. My take on it.
Well, it's the ghost of Frank Parsons. Frank Parsons would be 169 years old right now. So if Frank Parsons came back, he'd probably say, let me go back to sleep. That would be his general reaction to the field, I think. Just let me go back to sleep. So my question, I think we, through our careers or through our own kind of mental fantasies, we think this is the book I really, really should write. I've got some interest in it. I got some passion in it. But on further reflection, what's the point of doing it? So my question is, what is that book for you?
I honestly, I don't know. My dumbass is writing a textbook right now. I mean, so I never really saw myself doing that at all, because like, who reads textbooks, you know, except students, and they don't even really read them. They purchase them, right? And then they flip through them and grab titles and boxes and things like this. Clearly I'm a little jaded on that. And I sit here and I'm sort of like, you know, there's so many things that I find interesting, you know, like singing your way through the day. Like I would just love to just write a book about that, you know, and how therapeutic that is, that I love to sing my way through the day, dance my way through the day at times, just depending on what I need at that given time. But I'm sort of like, I don't know if anybody is really as Looney Tunes as I am to want to sit here and be like, well, what's it feel like? What's the experience? How can I do that? You know, it just feels a little self-helpy, and I don't know, like, I love self-help, but I don't read those books. I'm not going to Eat, Pray, Love. I mean, that's just not my jam, you know? So I legitimately don't even know how to answer this question.
So I'm back to the dreams. I don't know what this says about me, but I have some really vivid and horrible, scary horror dreams. And I always have, like, since growing up, all throughout college, after college, just my whole life. And I don't know why that is. I've never looked into it. Don't really want to, but I've got a lot of solid content for horror books. I could write a mean horror story based on real dreams that I've had. And every time I think about doing that, it makes me scared. And I don't like that. So what would be the point of staying longer in my horror dreams?
Funny enough, Gina, I'm reading a book right now where the main character is a writer, and she's writing her horror books from her nightmares and her lived experiences.
It's me, Jen.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah, so I've really wanted to write like a high fantasy novel, and that's just like a complete and utter pipe dream. Is not something that I've like really put a lot of like serious thought into. I think it's, you know, I look around and I you know, see either books written by other people that are high fantasy novels, or especially like media nowadays, like movies, games, things of that sort. And my kind of thought is like, it seems like everybody's kind of already done everything. And so am I bringing anything new to the table? And that's kind of like my thought there is like, what am I doing that's different or unique? And I don't know, maybe it's just as simple as like, write a good book with good characters and good, interesting story. And I'm like, well, that's maybe where the skills come in, is do I have the skills to do that? I don't know. But if I ever had the free time, and maybe time wasn't an option, and you know, maybe I'd sit down and actually start writing. Who knows?
That's my baby boomer coming through, man. You always got to look at the controls on your dashboard, or whatever you call these. What are these, screens? Yeah, whatever. Anyway, when it's on the screen, it's called something else, and I'm supposed to remember all this stuff. Anyway, it looks like a typewriter with a video camera on it. What was the question? Oh, right, the book. Yeah, so I kind of went through this. I was kind of figuring out, what do I want to, because I'd done textbooks, and I think textbooks are wonderful. I myself, I don't have like the brain or the patience for a lot of IRB stuff, but man, you write a textbook and everyone's like, oh, all right, that's good, that's fine. But it's like fun, and it refines my teaching. So I love writing textbooks. But I was like, I want to do more popular stuff. And a friend of mine had connected me with his literary agent, and he said, well, pitch me five things. And I pitched him five things. And the only thing that he was really interested was in one called Born Liars, The Important Role of Deception in All of Our Lives. And I was really at a point in my life where I was like trying to kind of like, I've kind of tried to figure out what the truth of a situation is and present it in my work. And no one wants that. I get that. And then I was like, well, why am I going to keep doing that? And then I was also trying to be more positive, because humanity is certainly capable of horrific mendacity, but also transcendence. I was like, can't we just point toward the transcendence a little more? So yeah, I just decided I didn't want to do it because it would just be a downer.
I don't know where this question came in my head and why I put it out there, but I've struggled through my whole career thinking I want to write a book on technology applications for the use in counseling and teaching counseling. And it was an easier idea younger in my career, because technology wasn't moving as fast. And, you know, however, there's not a market for it in our profession. Let's face it. There are lots of other things out there that people are going to buy that are written by authors in our profession than at that time a book on here's how you do technology. There are folks who like it, folks who don't like it. That's just the way it is. Now, as things moved along, technology moved so quickly that you couldn't write a book and have it published in any frame where anything would make matter. So looking at digital books was sort of the next thing I thought. But even so, by the time you get the digital book 6 to 8 months later, it's obsolete. Because I know people who write these digital books on technology and its application, and it's just in and out real quick. So I think that's been one of those books where I said, now what's the point of doing it? Eric and I do Tech Savvy Professors, so we get our licks out that way, and it's kind of immediate through a podcast, but it's not a book. So that's where I came with that. Well, we have one final shot question. Movies that you liked that no one else seemed to. Jen, here's your opportunity to say, I don't go to movies.
Well, I don't anymore, but I used to go all the time. So the one that popped into my mind first was from the mid-90s, Set It Off, with Queen Latifah, Vivica Fox, Blair Underwood, like all of these folks who are like really somebody now who weren't really that much in the mid-90s. I remember going to see it and like with probably like 8 or 9 people that I was in school with, and they were just like, oh, it was horrible. I'm like bawling at the end. They're like, that was horrible. They're murderers. Why are you crying? Like, seriously. And I thought it was fabulous, and I've watched it several more times since the mid-90s.
So mine is called About Time, and it's a movie that both Don and I really loved, and everybody else that we've ever talked to about that movie has been like, why? So that would be mine. And I'm glad I've got one other person in my corner who liked it. We've watched it like 50 times, and we don't really watch a lot of TV either. But that one, for whatever reason, it stuck.
So I was thinking about, I actually think I spent the most time thinking about this question because I couldn't come up with something that I liked, but no one else did. And that makes me feel weird because it makes me feel like my opinions are a little bit too normal. So I need to like change that and watch some more movies like pronto. But the one that stuck out for me was, and this movie is, I'm sorry, this movie's trash, but it's the original Super Mario Bros. Movie, like way back in the day. It's not a good movie, and yet I love it for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, mine would be Slacker by Richard Linklater. Totally underrated film. All the stuff about interdimensional, like kind of time travel, timelines, crossing, everything meaning something but meaning nothing. It's all right there.
Well, I could not. I have about 600 movies that I purchase when they come out, and I keep them in a catalog on Apple Movies and can watch them whenever I want to. And, you know, my minor, as I mentioned before, was in film. And so there's some titles on here I found that I remembered seeing and people just hating it. So I'm going to rattle off a few. A Clockwork Orange, and basically anything by Kubrick, you'll find somebody who hates it. Eyes Wide Shut was another Kubrick film that people hated that I thought, I like films that kind of make you uncomfortable. I don't have to fall in love with the characters. I need to have that uncomfortableness. I got crap from a doctoral student when I said, you really need to go see Lost in Translation. And they came back and said, oh, it's an old guy and he's having an affair on his wife. And I was like, oh boy. Brazil, Terry Gilliam's film Fight Club was another one that I sat down with a group of people and said, you got to see this film. And we watched it, and they're like, what's wrong with you, Gensius? Basically, now I can say anything by Woody Allen, but Manhattan in particular, which was kind of timely because he was chasing a young girl in that film. Beautiful film. And then lately, Parasite, which won an Academy Award a couple of years ago. It is a kind of gritty family class system movie that people walk away from. Some folks walk from and go, ooh. So yeah, I got a long list of movies that I like that no one else seemed to. But it for our listeners, we've got some ideas of things that you can check out now, even if it's the original Super Mario Brothers film. Or About Time, which I think has been done multiple, there have been multiple versions of it, if I remember correctly. I have to look into that. Anyways, thanks to the firing squad, Jen, Elliot, Gina, and Mitch. And look for some of these characters on their podcasts on the podtalk.net. You can find out more about them at circularfiringsquad.net. Make sure and check out the Tech Savvy Professor podcast hosted by Eric and myself. Our theme music is from Menaj a Quad, Real Swing Shet. That's it for this episode of Circular Firing Squad. Ready, fire, aim.